Hey guys, what's up? It is week 333. So first and foremost, I want to talk a little bit. I didn't get a chance to dive into everything on this, but I had a little involvement with this release as well from Unearthed Films. And this is August Underground Mortem, the second in the August Underground trilogy. I got to interview Fred a little bit about this movie. This is probably one of the craziest, most disturbing movies ever made. That's kind of the whole MO of this one. It's so disgusting and never relents. It's intense. It's insane. So yeah, I got to sit down with Fred and talk to him a little bit about it. And, you know, Fred's a great guy. I got a little bit on all three of the movies, and it'll have a special feature as penance as well. But I just want to kind of show you the release, guys, see what it is. New artwork in there, which is actually really awesome. There'll be an up close too, back, all the special features, everything like that. And then we have the classic kind of Mortem cover in there. I'll show you everything in more detail on there. You get DVD and Blu-ray, and new features on here. New 2023 transfer, new audio commentary by FX artist Jeremy Cruz and Ultraviolet Magazine art editor. Audio commentary by Toe Tag, new Mortem Lives, new The Most Disturbing Scene, new Remembering Killjoy, new A Family Affair of Love and Hate, an interview with Michael Meggett, new Stephen Biro, interviews Jeremy Cruz, new art editor and Alina Sleeth, Sleeth interview, new Zoe Rose Smith interviews Fred Vogel, new David Parker interviews Fred Vogel, new Snuff Purgatory Severn Cinema interviews Fred Vogel, Necrophagia Rugmorg Dissa Disciple promo video, Rugmorg Disciple behind the scenes gallery, deleted and extended scenes, US premiere 2003, new extensive photo gallery, new Sickness and Necrophagia mockumentary, Sickness trailer, new Mortem screening flashback weekend 2004, new Slit Throat demo flashback weekend 2004, new Zombie demo flashback weekend 2004, original animation trailers. And a lot of this stuff is on the DVD as well. So it's a Blu-ray and a DVD. It is Region A locked for the Blu-ray. But yeah, that is insane that August Underground Mortem, one of the most disturbing films ever made, is getting a wide release from Unearthed Films. So if you're a fan of it, definitely pick it up. And it has a slew of new special features on there. So you should enjoy it. It's pretty crazy stuff if anybody's not ever seen that movie. So first up, we're going to talk a little bit about 88 films. The Last Blood, a.k.a. Hard Boiled 2, or Hard Boiled 2, The Last Blood. And it does have some vague similarities, although it's not really a sequel to Hard Boiled, just kind of a name only. And they were mentioning this actually came out after or before Hard Boiled. So it's like a renaming, kind of the deal. They do a lot of that stuff here. So yeah, this one is directed by Wong Jing, and it has a couple familiar faces in here. The face I most recognize is the guy that they call Fatty in this, and I'm almost 100% positive he is the guy from Fatal Vacation, who also plays a similar kind of comic relief character. This movie is awesome. It is insane. So, The Last Blood. The plot of this is essentially there's this group of a worldwide terrorist, and their goal is to create disrupt the entire planet and kill all political and religious leaders. So they have their eyes set on the Dalai Lama, basically, in this movie, and he is traveling to Singapore, and he's about to get off a plane, and we have a couple kind of government officials who are on the case, really, and trying to get these terrorists down. So they're directly tied to this. There's also kind of like a young kind of thuggish kind of goofy guy on the plane with his girlfriend. And Dalai Lama warns her, you have the same birthday as me. Maybe something tragic will happen. I feel like we're going to share tragedy. So what happens is, of course, they put a $100 million bounty out on the Dalai Lama. So there's a group of Japanese, like Red Army terrorists after the Dalai Lama, and there's an assassination attempt. Now, this isn't really spoiling anything because the whole plot basically is this. So the thug's girlfriend gets horribly injured as well as the Dalai Lama. And they both have a rare blood type. So there's only five or six people in this entire place area with this blood type. So their goal is to track them down while they basically, the two are waiting at the hospital. See, instead of Hard Boiled, we have this big showdown in the hospital. This time we're trying to keep the bad guys, you know, the people's blood transfusion from getting to the hospital. So there's a relation here. So there are two government guys and this kind of thug team up to try to find these people who have, you know, the blood so they can donate it. Along the way, there is tons of innocent people gunned down by the terrorists. There is a high-intensity motorcycle chase. About 20, 30 motorcycles chase the car while all these people are shooting back at them. It's really epic, really crazy stuff. Lots of crazy explosions. Tons of innocent bystanders getting killed. Kids get shot in here. It takes you back, really, some of the people they kill. They don't really pull their punches, and then the next minute they'll have some moments of humor, right? That's very Hong Kong cinema. It's awesome. It's amazing. It's kind of a one of a kind deal. And tonally, a lot of people maybe never get used to Hong Kong cinema, but once you embrace it and you get used to it, it's hard. You'd be hard pressed to find some more entertaining, insane films around, to be honest. So basically, the last donor is this character named Fatty, who's kind of a goofy, kind of owes everybody money kind of deal, and they have to protect him at all costs. Along the way, there's kind of like three main henchmen or terrorists. There's a bunch of them, dozens of them, and there's tons of these violent shootouts and everything, but there's three kind of main ones. One kind of crazy kind of guy, one who's more, I guess, in the technological stuff or computer-based stuff, and then one like badass chick who does kind of like, she's like a baroness from G.I. Joe, right? She always kind of blending in. She's very tricky. All the terrorists are really great. The lead guy is awesome as well. He wears these glasses and he's just super clever and kind of by the book, but at the same time, the book saves his ass. Well, reading into things and more. And one of the guy has kind of the Benny syndrome, right, from Total Recall, where he's got like 8 kids. And so it's pretty entertaining. And of course, the thug is kind of going at the throat of the two cops the entire movie. But anyways, The Last Blood is actually really, really good stuff. It stars Alan Tam and Andy Lau. Andy Lau's in a bunch of stuff. Here's the character, the comedic character here. And again, like I mentioned, every Hong Kong movie always has to have a character named or called Fatty in it. It's just a thing that's in there. As far as the special features, we have we have an English and Cantonese, but we also have audio commentary with Hong Kong film expert Frank Jin. He also brings a guest on there. That's really well done. English trailer, Hong Kong's trailer, and a reversible cover and everything like that. If you're looking for crazy action, it doesn't quite reach the heights of Hard Boiled, but it comes damn near close. Really entertaining stuff, The Last Blood. Okay, guys, get your pervert cards out. We got a Nikatso erotic films here. I was listening to the Sick on Cinema guys, and they did another Nikatsu episode. So I was like, you know what? It's been a while since I covered one of those. So to kind of a shout out Sick on Cinema, I decided to do a Nikatsu film myself. This is True Story of a Woman in Jail. Hell of Love. That's right. So if you guys are not familiar with these are Japanese kind of films that went to theater. They're erotic kind of cinema. They're fairly short, always about, 55 to like 75 minutes at most. But this one gets down to the basics pretty quick. You know, there's a few of these true story women in jail, women in prison kind of movies. They have women in prison kind of style films. So basically what we have here is a woman wanders in on her husband. And you're not really sure exactly the circumstances, but she's definitely a jaded lover and sees this woman in these tattoos having sex with her lover. She flips out and she kills her husband and kills this woman. And she ends up getting sent to prison. The opening's great. The music is fantastic. It reminds me of something that Quentin Tarantino would drool over, which is a compliment. So essentially, it has this great music, and she's sentenced to this prison and everything like that. She gets put in this cell with these kind of almost like strange kind of, they almost seem cultish at one point, but they definitely have a group together, and they seem to not beat each other up quite as bit, but they do have a lot of lesbian relationships. It is a woman in prison, erotic Nikatsu film. So what can you expect? About that. So of course there's a lot of lesbian play going on, and eventually there's some baddies here. The warden is looking for a promotion. He's a complete tool bag. And then there's the main officer in here, or is it the warden's going to be governor? And then there's a kind of main officer in here who's a perverse dude who has a homemade dildo that he tortures women with, of course. And then one of the other guards is this female who's madly obsessed with the warden. So we have all these kind of weird characters, fairly quickly, somebody ends up dead, somebody poisoned that knows something they shouldn't, and our lead here, who's often very quiet, keeps to herself, doesn't talk for a big chunk of the movie. Actually, you know what? A movie that this kind of reminds me of, kind of was inspired by, is Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, which is an excellent movie. I feel like, is it Lady Vengeance? It's called Lady Vengeance. The other one's Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, but this is Lady Vengeance. It's similar to that, except that's like an A-caliber, amazing movie, Korean movie. South Korean movie, but this kind of reminds me of it, honestly. And she obviously, this is more perverse and erotic and everything like that, but she starts to kind of stumble on this stuff. But at the same time, somebody from her past life who's not quite dead comes into this prison and they want the revenge. There's going to be fights and there's going to be a giant prison riot at the very end, which involves kind of water sports. If anybody doesn't know what that means, just watch Cruisin', right? Where the yellow hanky in your back pocket. But yeah, anyways, water sports, anyone. I think of the line from Redneck Zombies. I'm sorry, that's inappropriate. Water sports, anyone? Sorry. But anyways, yeah, this is a true story of a woman in jail, hell of love. Yeah, good stuff for what it is. Get your pervert cards ready. Yeah, you're going to have a wet one. Okay, this big monstrosity over here. Yeah, this is the Eurocine Collection Volume 1. And yeah, this is from Full Moon, and they put all these movies out individually, and I had covered a couple of them. So this has six movies: as Angel of Death, directed by Jess Franco and Andrea Bianchi; Panther Squad with Sybil Danning; Downtown Heat by Jess Franco; Countdown to Esmeralda Bay, directed by Jess Franco; Night of the Eagles, directed by Jess Franco; and Mania Killer, or Manic Killer, directed by Antonio Bianchi, who did Burial Ground and Strip Nude for Your Killer. Now, I covered Panther Squad, and I'm not a huge fan of that movie at all, so I'll leave it at that. It's a very boring film. It does have Jack Taylor in it and Sybil Danning. And then we also covered A Mania Killer, which is hilarious towards the end, has a good cast, it's completely nonsensical, silly, kind of trashy crap. Robert Ginty, Bo Steffens, Chuck Connors, you know, it's got a good cast. Bo Simpson, that's very funny. So yeah, those movies, if you want to check out the reviews, I'll link those below, or they'll pop up here, and you can check those out. So first, we're going to start with Angel of Death. That's right here. So basically, a lot of these are going to bleed together, because you got to think this is like mid-80s Jess Franco, Uracini movies, and they're all very similar. So Angel of Death is actually a co-directed with Franco and Andrea Bianchi. I'm not sure who did what. Maybe we got a Zombie 3 situation here, right, where one of them was directing Lucio Fulci, and then, you know, Bruno Mattei came in. But in this situation, who's Bruno Mattei and who is Lucio Fulci, right? If you're talking Jess Franco and Andrea Bianchi, who's who? I don't know. But so anyways, this is a fun movie about kind of there's this group of Nazi hunters looking for certain Nazis and everything like that. And they kind of figure out that they might be on to finding out where Joseph Mengele is. That's right, the Joseph Mengele. So it's in South America, and it ends up being Howard fucking Vernon, right, is Joseph Mengele. And they use that kind of this, like, call girl kind of to find out where that she is, and they kind of go through and everything like that. Has a nice cast in here. There's a couple other people. If I'm not mistaken, I believe Fernando Rey is in here as well. And this one is silly. It has kind of this action set piece at the very end, which is really cheap, where we have this like kind of group, this like kind of ragtag group of guys going in to attack the Nazi castle. I'm probably mixing all these up, right? But there's a guy who's like throwing grenades and shit, which is really funny. He has a crossbow at the very ending. It's pretty silly. It's pretty nonsensical. I like Howard Vernon, I'm not going to lie. He is a Jess Franco regular. He's in a bunch of movies. In fact, this is going to be a Franco Fest episode. There's six fucking Jess Franco movies in this episode. So I'm going to don this. 333 is going to be Franco Fest, Volume 1. Maybe there'll be another Franco Fest down the line. But we're calling this Franco Fest, okay? And the first one we're talking about is Angel of Death. So this one is entertaining enough. It's silly. Howard Vernon is Joseph Mengele. You could do a lot worse. Also has Chris Mitchum in here, who is kind of this like borderline kind of crippled guy who's absolutely ridiculous, who brings in kind of the prostitutes and everything. And it's got a really downbeat ending. A lot of people getting killed and shot at the end that maybe you don't really expect. But overall, entertaining. Nice little action set piece. Kind of exploitation, a little bit of sleaze in here. Angel of Death. It looks pretty decent, actually. No subtitles, unfortunately, but this one I do think has a 5.1 surround sound. Now, some of these only have 2-point mixes, some have 5.1 surround sounds as well, and the sound are pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of action, a decent amount of action in this one. So Angel of Death is kind of one of the higher up in the box set, I would say. It's better than Panther Squad and better than Mania Killer, I would say, and better than Downtown Heat. So we put this one kind of in the top half of the box set, Angel of Death. Next up in the box set is going to be Downtown Heat. And this is probably the most unintentionally funny movie of the six, for the sole fact that, I don't know, it's one of these kind of latter-day Euro films where, like, some people are speaking in English, I think, and then some aren't. I'm not 100% sure, but it gives me the vibe, you know, kind of like towards the end when we had a lot of those Film Mirage movies where people were just, they're making them in America and they're speaking English, but I don't really know, because this has some of the worst acting I've ever seen, to be honest, in any Jess Franco movie, in any movie, period. The main detective detective or one of the main detectives is truly awful here. Basically, it follows the story of a guy trying to figure out what happened to a loved one, and he goes down the line and runs into all these kind of strange characters, including a ridiculous group of punks that he meets in a junkyard who have the worst dubbing slash voices of all time, and kind of the most ragtag group of ridiculous nonsense I've ever seen. They're like, yeah, man, we're gonna mess you up. It's just like, this movie has got to be one of these ones that's so bad it's hilarious to people. I don't always love movies like that. I'm not really one of the gung-ho guys for that kind of audience. So, like, I'm watching this kind of just baffled. Like, the opening has some action, the ending has some action, but there is a lot of just over-the-top, ridiculous, bizarre characters in the center of this, in the middle of this movie, the center that kind of, that is absolutely bonkers and just insane. This is one of the goofiest, most nonsensical kind of, I guess, police procedural nonsense movies I've ever seen. It is weird. The one of the cops is got to be the worst actor in any Franco movie. Not the main guy, but like the kind of the main cop in it. He is absolutely ridiculous. And Lena Romay is in here, who's Franco's latter-day muse, and she's fine. She's kind of plays this really bizarre outfit. She has a really strange end, to be honest. This movie is nonsense. This is one of the most nonsensical movies I've ever seen. Probably one of the dumbest in the set besides Panther Squad. Panther Squad is the dumbest and the worst. I cannot recommend that movie at all. It's also boring. Like, that's the only one that I would be like, don't watch that at all. I would skip Panther Squad, unless you really, really love Sybil Danning. And most people do, but, you know, I just couldn't do that one. But, yeah, Downtown Heat, I can't give this a wholehearted recommend, but it is really funny and really weird and goofy. And it's got to be Franco's most bizarre, just, like, in terms of ineptness, I guess. I can't even say that. Franco makes a lot of weird movies. Next up, we're going to do Countdown to Esmeralda Bay. Now, this one originally was only on DVD, so this is an upgrade for this set. I don't know if they had a Blu-ray of it. And this has a nice little cast here. We have Fernando Rey in here, and we also have George Kennedy. Everybody loves George Kennedy, right? And even have Robert Forster. And I made a mistake once. I was like, Robert Forster never in a Jess Franco movie. And this one, he's playing this kind of crazy kind of this colonel who's going AWOL. So Fernando Rey plays the president. I can't remember exactly what country here. We also have Brett Halsey, Lucio Fulci, three-time actor here. Brett Halsey, Devil's Honey, and what's the other one he's in? I think he's in Touch of Death. So we got Brett Halsey. Maybe Cat in the Brain, was that just reused footage? Regardless. So, essentially, I should mention this too. It also has a guy, when I was watching this, and I was like, man, that guy looks so familiar. He looks just like Charlie Sheen. Guess what? It's Raymond Estevez, the third brother. You got Emilio, you got Charlie Sheen, you got Raymond Estevez? Ramon Estevez? I don't know. There's a third brother. Looks like Charlie Sheen. I was just like, that's not, what? He's in a couple of these movies. So, this one is actually really pretty much a solid movie. I think that it can be a little convoluted if you're not paying 100% attention here. So what we have is George Kennedy is an arms dealer in this kind of country that's kind of being like, it's definitely kind of in political turmoil here. We have Robert Forster, who is this colonel who wants to kind of take out all these radicals. And then we have this one character who is from the United States government who's trying to shake everything up and kind of make this country go completely unstable, basically, so they can come in and kind of change everything, make it a real democracy. Right. So at the same time, Ramon Estevez and Brett Halsey are these freedom fighters, and George Kennedy's daughter's involved, and his wife is also double stabbing. Lena Romay runs a prostitution den where Robert Forster kind of frequents very much, and Fernando Rey is the coward, spineless president. Is he going to find his backbone before it's too late and save his country? So yeah. Also, we have Antonio Mayans, who's in all four of these movies. Antonio Mayans is a Franco regular. He plays a priest in this one. He pops up in different extents in all four of these films. So yeah, we have like a lot of Franco guys that we're used to seeing in here, and this one has a decent amount of action. George Kennedy's solid in it, and it's great seeing Kennedy and Robert Forster face off at the very end of the movie. That does happen, and Forster's good in it. I mean, he does play like kind of this like crazy kind of guy who's like, you know, with like the accent and the mustache and just like the kind of like just random kind of totalitarian, you know, military guy that, you know, he probably shouldn't be playing nowadays, but he's always great. It's always a pleasure to see him. There's a decent amount of action. There's double crossing. Countdown to Esmeralda Bay is solid. Fernando Rey gets to do a good job in here. I think that the ending is well worth it, you know, for him. And you know, people always wonder, like, how do you get guys like George Kennedy and Fernando Rey and to be in his movies? But, you know, they show up for a few days, they get a decent paycheck, and, you know, the movies turn out okay. I mean, most people probably don't see him, but Countdown to Esmeralda Bay I enjoyed. I will say this, though. There's a scene in here, a couple, maybe 10 minutes, where the audio was bad. Like, you hear him talking, and then you hear a repeat of it, like the loops are dying, like the sound elements were slowly dying or something like that, where you can kind of hear it in the background re-looping and in slow motion. So be warned on that. But, you know, for the most part, it looked all right. And the ending, again, a downbeat, dark ending. But Countdown to Esmeralda Bay. Okay, and the last out of this Urocine Volume 1 collection is going to be Night of the Eagles with Mark Hamill and Christopher Lee. That's right, Christopher Lee worked with Jess Franco a bunch of times. He did like three or four in the 70s, 1970, like Bloody Judge, I think, is a Christopher Jess Franco, and he did a couple of the other ones too, right? So Lee worked with Franco a bunch. Count Dracula in 1970. I think, hell, he worked with Lee three times. I meant Franco three times in 1970 alone. So Night of the Eagles. This is a Nazi flick, and it's crazy to see like Christopher Lee play a Nazi sympathizer. He's basically a Nazi in here. And seeing him say Heil Hitler, you're just like, what? Because, you know, the story goes that he used to hunt Nazis, and I had to eat him up inside to have to say that. So basically it follows kind of the story of Christopher Lee's daughter and Ramon Estevez, who is a young kind of music guy. They're all Germans, and he gets kind of sent to go to the fight the war, of course, right? But he's in love with Christopher Lee's daughter. Christopher Lee has a bunch of money. He kind of supports the Nazi party through and through. And we have Mark Hamill, who's a military official, who also has his eyes set on Christopher Lee's daughter. And this is kind of an epic movie, right? So she kind of goes across to fight the war as well, and she sees action, and she becomes a performer, singing songs for soldiers. And the very ending, you know, she's singing songs for different soldiers. And I think that the movie actually has a good message in here. And Lee's great. I mean, I love Christopher Lee. You'd be hard-pressed to find an actor I think is better than Christopher Lee or more entertaining than Christopher Lee. He's one of these guys I'll watch anything. And this is my favorite of the bunch, obviously. Lee's good in it. He has a couple good speeches. He's like, everything's changed. Not for me. And it's just like, yeah, Lee, of course. But no, he's such a prick in it, but he's good. And it has some goofy kind of characters and everything like that. And it's not a perfect movie. It is a Franco kind of silly movie at times. Like, just kind of not the budgets don't come and everything. But for the most part, I really enjoy this one. And Lee's got some good moments. There's a 5.1 mix on this. You've seen Battle Scenes of War. And a lot of these movies will incorporate, you know, like stock footage or footage from other movies that's clearly thrown in there, you know, like Zombielake does it too. And you're just like, man, this does not match up at all, but you can kind of forgive it. Ramon Estevez is okay. And it's a dark movie. It is a dark film. But I enjoyed it for the most part. I think Night of the Eagles is probably the best. If I had to rank these, let's go. Night of the Eagles, Countdown to Esmeralda Bay, Angel of Death. And then we'll give a tie to Downtown Killer and Mania Killer. And the last is Panther Squad. I will open this up and show you guys it, but I'm not going to open it now because it's kind of a complicated set. It's got like books in here, and it's one of these kind of old VHS kind of style covers that, you know, Wizard Video used to do, so, which was owned by Charlie Band. So, and it's got the Wizard Video little logo down there. And no, they didn't find these in a warehouse, guys. No jokes about that. But it's pretty cool. I like these kind of nice little sets here, and you can kind of retire some of the disc because they're the same disc and they come in a little thing here. You can retire, you know, your Angel of Death disc and everything like that. So yeah, good stuff. Next up is another Franco from the Redemption line. And what we have here is The Awful Dr. Orloff. Now, this became like a series with unofficial spinoffs and everything like that. And I don't know all the details about the Orloff series. I've seen some of the unofficial sequels, like the one from 1970, Orloff Against the Invisible Man, which is a terrible movie. This is a much better movie. This is 1962, if I'm not mistaken. And this is heavily inspired by Eyes Without a Face, which go on and inspire stuff like The Abominable Dr. Fives and a million other movies, especially in the late 60s, or at least the 60s, because Eyes Without a Face was made in 1960. So after that, all these movies were being made. Like, so any movie where they have a loved one that is hideously disfigured or kind of dead, where a scientist is performing all crazy kind of experiments to try to bring them back to their full beauty or bring them back to life, is kind of an Eyes Without a Face riff. And this one is 1962. It's very much reminds me of that, and kind of Dr. X, or Revenge of Dr. X. Just Dr. X, yeah. So this one has those kind of vibes going here. And right in the beginning, we have like Howard Vernon stars in this, and it's no secret who the kind of madman is. Fifth woman is kind of kidnapped and everything, and it's done in a really kind of scary, kind of creepy way. Nice rainy streets, kind of black and white, good cinematography. And we see this kind of strange-faced character who has, like, these eyes that are completely, like, shell. It looks very much like Tourist Trap or something along those lines. Very creepy, and his name is, what, Morpho? Very weird. So we kind of realize that, you know, Howard Vernon has this daughter that is disfigured, and he wants to kind of bring her back to his full beauty. He blames himself. He has this woman that he used to love, and kind of Morpho, and he used to be a prison doctor. We get all this information in a huge exposition dump where Howard Vernon's like, I saved you from this prison, and I brought you, I signed your death certificate, all this kind of shit, right? So basically, he took these people from this, he signed their death certificate being a prison doctor, and now he has them working for him. Morpho is deformed. He's blind. He does all the bidding, and he's kind of a crazed killer. Now, he needs women to obviously try to fix his daughter. So that's kind of the plot here. He gets fixated on this young kind of a performer that he thinks looks just like his daughter. She has the immense beauty that will bring his daughter back after this. There's a police detective involved with that performer, so he's the kind of main person on the case. And there's like some obvious, like some clunky kind of dialogue or clunky kind of exposition, but for the most part, this is a pretty solid Franco movie. It's early, it spawned a bunch of sequels with Howard Vernon, made by Jess Franco as well. But this is a good movie with a nice little gothic kind of look to it. Good side characters. Of course, the drunk guy is pretty funny. Morpho is creepy as shit. It takes place in a castle. There's like a boat. All this kind of cool stuff. I enjoy this for the most part. There is some nudity in here, which is kind of surprising for 1962. Franco, maybe that's like this is like restored stuff. But regardless, I thought this was a pretty solid movie by Jess Franco. This is one of his better ones, right? You know, because like I said, in the 60s and 70s and stuff, Franco's movies were not the ones that they became in the mid-80s and later on and all that kind of stuff, too. So, yeah, The Awful Dr. Orloff, enjoyed it. Howard Vernon's always good, always great kind of villain, kind of crazy person in movies. But here's what we have. A mastered in HD from archival 35mm print, French with optional English subtitles, English dubbed, audio commentary by Tim Lucas, critic and co-editor of Video Watchdog, The Horror of Orloff, 60-minute interview with Jess Franco, directed by David Gregory, produced by Elijah Drenner, The Young Dr. Orloff Chronicles, 19-minute documentary by Daniel Goulet on the making of the film, Jess, What Are You Doing Now?, an 8-minute homage to Jess Franco by Daniel Goulet, featuring interviews with Franco's friends and collaborators. Yeah, so if you like it, check it out. Cool movie, enjoyed it. First time watch for me. I've not dived into the world of Orloff. Off, but I will soon. I will. And what is it's kind of a take on the name, what, The Hands of Orlok, which, you know, Mad Love was based on. So I mean, like, the long line of history and horror is intermingled and very similar and kind of incestuous and taking from each other and not. So yeah, check it out. It's good stuff. Okay, we're gonna hop into those 1981 movies.
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway evil will invade the world.
Thank you. say on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. In this little town, when the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and the horror was there. For the legend, they say, on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on and on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
And the first up from 1981 is a Franco. It's a Franco fest. Like I said, this is Sodomania. That's right. And this is one of his nastier, sleazier movies for sure. 81. It's a woman in prison movie. It's got Ajita Wilson in here, who's in Escape from Hell, which was a 1980 prison woman's prison movie. And she's in other things as well. You know, she pops up in a couple Italian films, if I'm not mistaken. I know she does. But I believe she's in Escape from Hell. It's been a while since I watched that. Last year, actually. But yeah, she is one of the first kind of like trans actresses around. And leave it to Franco to kind of put her in the movie. She was in one stuff before. Franco said she liked her, seeing her and everything, and put her in the movie. I think that's pretty cool, pretty crazy. Like, say what you want. A lot of people don't love Franco's movies, but Franco had balls. Franco was progressive in a lot of fronts, more so than a lot of other filmmakers. I would say Joe D'Amato was the same way. Now, if it's because they didn't give a flying fuck, or they, you know, Roger Corman even, you know, it's like an exploitation can somehow push boundaries in progressiveness and transgressiveness, but still. So we have Sodomania here. So basically the plot's really silly. It's a little long. It's going to get epic, like rape prison fest, but it's kind of repetitive at the same time. So a newlywed couple are driving through this kind of isolated location, these mountainous areas, and they're stopped by basically a bunch of women with machine guns, topless women in Daisy Dukes. Can't be that. I can't make this shit. I'm like talking about how progressive Franco is. Very progressive. Now watch him put all these girls in Daisy Dukes shirtless, and then yeah, it's like, okay, progressive Dave, yeah, I think you got the wrong fucking meaning. But hey, in 1981 it was right. So anyway, that's the funny thing. You take two steps forward, one step forward, you take two steps back. But it is what it is. It is 1981. We're talking exploitation, we're talking Franco here. So essentially, basically, these two are taken in, and Ajita Wilson runs this place, and she kind of gets a free pass because Antonio Mines is the governor. He comes there and he picks up prison women and has his way with them. Him and his wife just treat him terrible, sell him to, you know, drug smugglers and all these kind of terrible people into white slavery. So basically, she tells him, you can go. Your wife's staying here. He's not going to let that fly. So his wife, he leaves, but he's going to come back, right, with the buddies and try to rescue her. So essentially what happens is she gets treated to a whole bunch of abuse and rape. She gets in fights. We see what happens when one of the characters is basically taken and sold to Jess Franco, who plays this very flamboyant character. There's actually a sex scene with Jess Franco. And guys, Jess Franco's a bottom in this movie. I love Jess Franco. But yeah, so you see this kind of whole underground like place where you're seeing all these kind of weird like sexual things and people being sold into white slavery. But we also follow a character, what we see what happens to when the governor wants to do kind of a hunt, which kind of reflects, you know, it reminds me of the Countess Perverse, which was a Jess Franco movie where they kind of did the human hunting deal, or, you know, it's the most dangerous game. But yeah, we have that kind of deal done a million times. Hard Target, Surviving the Game, you know. They could pray a million times that story, right? But this is just a little small aspect, and it more is like in line with Countess Perverse, which is another Franco movie. So yeah, what happens is we kind of see what's going on here, and of course there's going to be a prison break, there's going to be some revenge, and there's going to be a lot of sex, there's going to be a lot of sleaze. This is one of the sleaziest movies Franco ever did. There's dog rape. There's a fucking German Shepherd rape somebody in here. I was like, are we watching a Joe D'Amato movie now? But I was just like, hey, I guess, you know, Joe D'Amato and Jess Franco, sometimes just a stone's throw away, right? But yeah, this one, if you're looking for sleaze, you're looking for trash, you're looking for nudity, you're looking for girls and Daisy Dukes fist fighting and lesbianism in a women in prison movie and chain gang stuff, then Sodomania is for you. It's exactly what you would expect. Hour and 43 minutes, 42 minutes of a lot of molestation. and Sleaze. So check it out if it sounds like it's up your alley, from 1981. Franco also did Bloody Moon this year, which I think is the better movie of the two, but I do enjoy this one for what it is. And I did like Franco in it too. So yeah, good stuff. Speaking of my boy Joey D'Amato here, we got Portal Holocaust from 1981. Yeah, this one came out in 1981 as well. Shot on the same island, same location, a lot of the same actors as Erotic Nights of the Living Dead from 1980, which I covered for last year. Now, these are kind of porno horror films. This one, I think, is way more pornographic than Erotic Nights of the Living Dead, if I'm not mistaken. This movie is super long. This is 7 minutes shy of 2 hours. So basically take like your average hour and 20 minute kind of horror zombie movie, kind of like slower one, less action, and add like 40 minutes of hardcore sex in it. And that's what you get when you look at Porno Holocaust. So we have some scientists here. Among them is Mark Shannon, and of course George Eastman. I know I'm missing somebody here. Mark Shannon and George Eastman are the big names. Some of the females you will recognize as well, I'm sure of it. So they're these scientists that go to this island that was exposed to radiation. So they're obsessed with these crabs. Like, these crabs are supposed to be this big, but they're huge. And probably smaller than the crabs that are actually on our actors here after they're rolling around in the whatever. But they go to this island, and there's weird superstitious shit about it. They have some, like, there's like 8 people on the island, including George Eastman, who plays the funniest scientist. Mark Shannon is the captain. And we have a bunch of, like, this countess, and she's, like, gorgeous. And all the women are gorgeous. All the people are good-looking here. And, like, you're just like, these are not scientists. Like, not the typical scientists. They're all, like, flirting, and then they're doing scientific stuff and whatnot and trying to have sex as many times as they can. The movie will veer off somewhere. And I'm like, I'm going to have sex with these random men at times, or we're going to have this lesbian extended scene. All the sex scenes are like 10 to 15 minutes, and there's like 10 of them. All right, I exaggerated. They're more like 8 minutes, but there's like 6 of them, and they're like literally at about 40 minutes of this movie of hardcore sex. I mean, you see a lot. I mean, it's sex, it's pornographic. It's not softcore, it's pretty hardcore. But about an hour into this movie, the zombie shows up. I think he's a zombie, and he rapes somebody to death with his giant, weird, discolored dick, which is clearly a prop, but then later on, he does get down. Zombie does get down. Later, we'd see movies like Otto or Up with Dead People, which had zombies fucking people. For real, Otto or Up with Dead People also has real sex scenes, and the Necrophiles Part 2, I believe, is more sexually graphic than the first one. I've only seen Part 1, but it's about a zombie who rapes women with a giant dick. This time, the zombie goes around and kind of screws, you know, or we could even take Flesh Eater, which Bill Hinesman doesn't rape anyone, but he fondles a lot of naked women in that when he's a zombie. So Porno Holocaust. It's slow, but there's always sex, there's always nudity, there's always kind of something going on, and the zombie starts killing everybody. It's not graphically like amazing in the special effects department. Makes a good piece, obviously, with Erotic Nights of the Living Dead, which I actually think is a little better, because I think that's more horror than this one. I think this one's more porn. This one's like 75% porn, 25% kind of horror, and it does remind me of Island Claws. It's kind of like radioactive things and just makes them a little bigger. But yeah, basically the girl finds a diarrhea after she's kidnapped and realizes this guy used to be on the island. He got exposed to radiation. He turned into like a zombie, which is basically just a guy with like Play-Doh on his face, and he goes around and kills and rapes the people of this island. Yeah, that's about it. George Eastman refused to have sex in this movie, and I don't really blame him. You know, obviously people always make the jokes about Mark Shannon having genital warts on his testicles. That's there. Yeah. If you wanted to see that. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's Porno Holocaust. People hate when people say that. I know, I'm sorry. But, the music is by Nico, what the hell's his name, who did Zombie Holocaust score. He's a great composer. Better than this movie. And I love Joe D'Amato too. You know, this year he also did Absurd, which is kind of semi-sequel to Anthropophagus. So I mean, Joe D'Amato is very busy during this time period at 80-81, and he made some cool movies. Porno Holocaust is okay. It's not great. It's not as good as Absurd. It's not as good as Anthropophagus. It's not as good as Beyond the Darkness. Of course not. But hey, it's cool to see, you know, Franco and Joey D still making movies, and a bunch after this as well. But yeah, there's some special features on here. This is probably long out of print. It'd be nice to see this get a re-release, I know. So brand on new camera with Mark Shannon, Part 1, on camera interview with George Eastman. So that's right. Porno Holocaust is the Code Red release. Next up is another one from 1981. And this is Jaws of Satan, originally called King Cobra. Wonder why they called it Jaws of Satan. It's the hint. It's Jaws, because of Jaws, guys. But so essentially what we have here is, this is a bizarre one. This has Fritz Weaver is the main star in this. Fritz Weaver from Creepshow and a slew of other movies, you know. He plays a preacher in this. I feel like I'm missing one of the actors. I really do. I feel like there's got to be somebody else in here. Really, no, Christina Applegate has a tiny role as well. You know, really, there's not that many people in Jaws of Satan. It's an independent movie. Fairly independent. I know the director and the writer and stuff, they didn't really go on to do anything else. Might be the same guy. It was definitely kind of made regional, and it's decent. It's a solid little kind of killer snake movie. Obviously, this year, Venom came out too, with Klaus Kinski and Oliver Reed and Sterling Hayden, which is a good killer snake movie. So this one is different. This one definitely has more of the giant snake approach, not the kind of crime, kind of kidnapping story with a venomous Black Mamba, as Oliver would say. This one more follows the giant kind of King Cobra snake. It's not necessarily giant, but he is super evil. He is giant, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, evil snake. So he escapes in the very beginning off of a train, and some people end up dead. And right away, people are kind of worried about it. The coroner calls in like a snake expert, like, hey, this doesn't look right. There's an escaped snake. And of course, you know, the snake is targeting and killing a bunch of people around there. It definitely has a direct connection with the local kind of religious, you know, the priest in Fritz Weaver. And we kind of go back and realize this is tied in directly with his family lineage, which reminds me of the Devonsville Terror, which came out a couple years later. You know, that direct lineage with the curse and all that kind of shit. So the snake's after him. And the trailer almost makes it look like more of an Exorcist style thing. But overall, I think the movie's trying to get those Exorcist audience and the Jaws audience, because, like, of course they have this big grand opening of some bullshit that no one gives a shit about in the long run. And the mayor and the guy who set it up doesn't want to cancel it, right? They do not want to cancel this because think of the money they'll lose. But there's a killer snake going around, and the killer snake has, like, caused a ruckus among all the local rattlesnakes. So a bunch of people are getting bit by rattlesnakes and shit. So we have the Jaws aspect, right? Like, we can't close this because we'll lose business. Like, it's every fucking movie. Thanks a lot, Marie Hamilton from Jaws. He's not in this, but you know, you get the point. That guy fucking close nothing. So basically we have that going on. We have a group of hunters going around trying to kill the snakes and whatnot. And we do have a lot of decent side characters, right? Like the local kind of eccentric old woman who knows the history is really cool. She's like the local witch. She's a good character that has good moments with Fritz Weaver. There's kind of a cool scene in the cemetery where the snake chases Fritz Weaver and another priest. Overall, this is a solid kind of regional kind of horror film one-off by guys, and I like this one. I thought it was pretty decent, enjoyed it, small-town feel. Originally called King Cobra, which I don't know which one I like better. I kind of might like Jaws of Satan better, King Cobra, either or. They're not amazing titles, but you know what? I think I like Jaws of Satan. I'm going with the corporate moneymaker title here. I think King Cobra would make me think nowadays like a sci-fi original crap fest, like, you know. I think there was one called King Cobra, but it was like kind of right before the heyday of those kind of like really bad sci-fi movies, when sci-fi used to have a shred of decency. I'm sorry, I'm bad-mouthing the Sharknado shit. It's not my thing. Not my cup of tea, guys, but Jaws of Satan, it is. It is my cup of tea. It's my cup of venom. So this also has Empire of the Ants on here, which I don't think I've ever seen from 77, but I don't think this has any special features on here, but I did enjoy it, and it would be nice to see a re-release or a release of Jaws of Satan, because this is out of print as well. And last, but certainly not least, of the 1981 movies is from the Sonny Chiba collection, and this is going to be Samurai Reincarnation. And the director of this one, he did a movie from last year. I can't, it's a Fukuja, he's a very prolific director. He directed The Green Slime, Battle Royal, Crest of Betrayal. The dude is, like, amazing Japanese director. He directed Virus from the year before. Now he directs Samurai Reincarnation with Sonny Chiba. And now, at first, Sonny Chiba is not like the main character in this. This movie opens up amazingly. I was so on board with it. So we talk about this idea, basically a period piece here, where the Japanese people in charge, or the kind of government, didn't want Christianity around anymore, so they massacred the entire group of Christians, right? And we see this amazing kind of set piece where they have 4,000, like 40,000, whatever. Thousands of people were massacred here, and their heads are on pikes, and it just looked like a brutal slaying. And I'm just like, and it does this narration, and it's like, hell, part one or something. Like, oh, shit. And we find out that this Christian leader, like, as all his people were being killed, they prayed and prayed and prayed, and they got no salvation. So he's upset. He made a pact with the devil. He wants to come back, and he wants to get revenge on the sons of bitches that caused him problems, right? But he can't do it alone. So he goes around and he collects all these people who are basically going to die or just died that are unhappy with their life. So he picks up like this once great warrior who is maybe the greatest warrior of all time, but he's not 100% sure and he's having his doubts. He takes him with him. He takes this woman who is wronged by her husband, who kind of is a samurai, who's a shogun, wronged by her husband, brings her back. All these are all little mini stories to realize who these people are. A young man who died in battle, and this crazy kind of priest who had these terrible thoughts of rape and murder and just, you know, all this kind of stuff. Okay, so we lost the camera. All these kind of stuff. We'll just go here. So, like, all this kind of rape and murder and everything like that, he had all these ideas and feelings about it. So he gets all these people together to finally kind of go on this vendetta. But Sonny Chiba is this badass samurai who is kind of directly related to a couple of these people. And he kind of ends up standing up against them. But this kind of Christian guy is starting to manipulate behind the process. And we have all these big, giant battle sequences and these kind of demons that have to fight him. And we have large battles and everything. And at first, it starts off very much like horror, when you kind of get the glimpse of all these kind of ideas of hell and Asian cinema and stuff are really cool. But it gets more to be like kind of a big samurai epic. The villains are great. The acting is solid. The fights are cool. It's a big kind of epic, kind of awesome fucking movie. I would really recommend checking out Samurai Reincarnation. Great director. Sonny Chiba's pretty badass in it. You know, I've seen a handful, probably like 6 or 7 Sonny Chiba movies, probably more that I just always forget, like as he's older, you know, kind of in his heyday, you know, I've seen a Doberman Cop and stuff like that, but Street Fighter. So like, you know, but I haven't seen all his output, but this one's really great. This is Samurai Reincarnation. Great, again, the set pieces, great villains, great fight scenes. The end fight scene in the Room of Fire, and like who his main villain is at the very end is pretty fucked up. You know what I mean? How the demons can kind of prey on the weak. That's what Sonny Chiba actually says. You know, I mean, the Sonny Chiba says to him, he's like, you preyed on these people when they were weak, and it leaves it open. I think there is possibly a sequel to Samurai Reincarnation, but anyways, great stuff. There is no special features on this disc itself, but this box has a bunch of movies on here. It's got Yakuza Wolf 1, Yakuza Wolf 2, Bodyguard Kimba 1 and 2, Shogun Shadow, Samurai Reincarnation, and Swords of Vengeance. So great stuff. And there's a volume 2 that came out. I'll have to check that out as well. Okay, now we're going to hop into the Patreon pick. And this is by Nick Mua. And he picked one called Shepherd, which came out a couple years ago. So first and foremost, this is a film from the United Kingdom. And this came out in what, 2021, 2022. And so this is a very, you know, people will be like, this is elevated horror. And that's just a silly thing to say, right? Because a lot of the 70s and older films, and there's always been like high class, highbrow horror films, right? Like always have been getting made, but now there's just more of a kind of a focus on them with stuff like Ari Aster coming out and people like that and Robert Eggers. So this is definitely in the line of those kind of more modern days, like movies like that. And I wish I would have saw this when it came out, because watching it, you know, already in 2023, I kind of have that fatigue. I am getting that fatigue. I love Hereditary. I think Midsommar is great. The Witch. Those are all fantastic movies. The Lighthouse. And this one shares the most DNA with The Lighthouse. I'm going to be honest here. In fact, the guy is at a fucking lighthouse. So, and that was 2019. So we're getting this kind of thing here. And there's that one Cold Skin, which is also a lighthouse kind of horror film, but that's more of a H.P. Lovecraft style and inspired thing. So like we're getting all these kind of like, you know, these elevated horror films. And this one, Shepherd, here is definitely that. We have the trauma in the very beginning that this character is obviously haunted by something, and he's going to have to confront it. And he goes to this isolated area. He's lost his wife. He has problems with his mother due to what happened with his wife and stuff with his father. So all this kind of stuff plays into it, right? And he's going to essentially go to this isolated lighthouse and just kind of work on these sheep and all these kind of things. He's kind of being a shepherd, right? But there's a lighthouse off in the distance, and that's where he becomes obsessed with, and there's something obviously that took place in here, so there's a main focus there. And as it goes on and on, like we get more details about his life, and we kind of get glimpses, and we kind of think, are we in the Others kind of scenario? Remember the movie The Others? Regardless, we definitely bring up these questions. Not many side characters, right? We have his mother, we have the flashbacks, and we also have this kind of woman who dropped him off. She has like, she's half blind. She's just a really good actress, really good character actor. She does a good job. I like seeing her. I think that's Katie Dickey. Is that her, or is the other actress in here named that? I can't remember 100%. But yeah, so first and foremost, I gotta say this movie, whoever did the set design is brilliant. Whoever did the scouting locations is brilliant. The cinematographer is brilliant. All that kind of stuff. And in fact, the direction is brilliant. Like all that kind of stuff is really well done. It's a really well-made film. The script bored me. Not horrible. It's just by the time in 2023, it's already become kind of old hat, right? Where I've seen better versions of it. And that's a shitty thing to say, right? Because I see better versions of slashers all the time. Like, Dave, you love Slaughter High. It's a piece of shit. You've seen a better version of that a million times. Like, yeah, but it's got acid beer. See the kind of dumb shit that horror fans do. Like, we all do it. So, like, but I'm looking at this, and I like the cream of the crop of these movies. Like, I like a lot of the 70s ones like that, you know, like Rosemary's Baby. But then, like, I love Hereditary, you know? And Midsommar, and The Lighthouse is good. And this one feels it has a lot of DNA there. But I think that I'm just a little burnout on these. I burn out on these kind of slow-paced, kind of really kind of trauma-based horror films that are made in the last 5 to 6 years. I'm a little burnout. Now, saying that, it's a well-shot, well-directed film. The script is just a little old hat. And if I would have saw it 2 years ago, I may not think this way, which is unfortunate. But in 5 years, 10 years, I might think differently of it. But currently, it's a good film that I just don't have much interest in revisiting. That's The Shepherd. Like I said, this is a movie that every shot, you know, they have stuff in the background, stuff in the foreground. Every shot is well composed. You know, they sat there and thought. Like, they did a really good job at setting everything up here. I just wish that it was a little different for me. I don't love it, but it's definitely a purgatory, possibly, story, a haunted story, you know? It's like if you were watching The Lighthouse and The Others, and they ran into each other and kind of did a little different things. That's what I would go with. But yeah, that's that. Okay, guys, let's get these questions, comments, and concerns. We have a bunch this time around. So this is from 2 weeks, right? This is JaPunk7092. Love looking at the VHS in the background. Oh, and I never heard of See China and Die. I believe the lead is Esther Roll, who is on a comedy sitcom early 1980s television. What's Happening? Was it Good Times, maybe? Yeah, Good Times. See, you know, when we always used to play Trivial Pursuit, TV was always the worst. Old TV is really rough. If it didn't play on TV when I was growing up, I probably don't know it. And some of the Nick at Night and stuff would play, but, you know, I don't know all old TV, so that's a real blind spot for me. See China and Die is a pretty interesting Larry Cohen movie, too, though. Horror Cinema 5130, the Black Lady in See China and Die is Esther Roll from the TV show Good Times. See, a lot of love for Good Times. She's great in the movie, though. Bad Brains Horror 3613. Also, I watched Debut at Dawn for the first time and was very, very impressed. Had to check out My Sweet Satan because you showed it off in your 94 year in horror. Excellent stuff. Still got to pick up Slimy Little Bastards. You don't got to pick up Slimy Little Bastards, but I'm glad you love Van Bever stuff. I love Van Bever stuff. And he continues, hey, Dave, have you watched any David the Rock Nelson films? He's doing a Q&A in Philly tomorrow. I've heard of him. I know his movies are super bizarre and super independent, but no, I've not. We have a local horror director, Bryce Longo, who did a tribute film, The Return of the Pumpkin Man. Looks like a fun night. Longo did two throwback SOV films that I bought, Blood, Sick, Psychosis, and A Corpse for Christmas that look awesome. Great episode as always. The Corpse for Christmas, that's coming out soon, right? Coastline FX, hi Dave. I've always wanted to see China and Die and the perfect VHS, pre-cert VHS days in the UK. We didn't get a release, though it did have a catalog mentioning coming soon from VTC. I wasn't going to buy a 4K player, but Nightmares in the Damaged Brain in UHD, that's a done deal. Great choice. Those peanuts and packing are great, and I had just a cup of water near me, and I add them to water. They dissolve instantly and pour it on my plants. Whoa, I never heard that. Chris Harper, 2317. I might give Gangnam Zombies a shot, but I just got a copy of The Witch Part 1 Subversion. I heard of that. I'm worried about my sound here. Sorry about that, guys. Might lose sound. My separate audio might drop to different audio. But was it Southport Rocker 4929? Was obsessed with Carlito's Way when I worked in the video store, though not seen it in many, many years, though. Performances are great. Excellent haul. Thank you. Explosive action. My secret shame is I've never seen any of these classic U.S. crime mafia films, only the Euro ones. Carlito's Way, Goodfellas, even The Godfather. Do you have three recommend I start with? Perhaps it's the three I just mentioned. Those are all three great ones. Obviously, The Godfather and Goodfellas are kind of the must. But if you go a little different, maybe sleaze it up and go with King of New York or something and just throw it in there. Mark Stranato, 3522. This is off topic. Is everything okay with Moods? Hasn't done a video in 4 months. Just curious. Been following for a while. Great update as always. Thank you. Moods takes the summers off, you know, and he's always busy, but he's perfectly healthy and fine. Fetish Magic, okay. Fetish Magic 2419. Read my gold chain, says Alanita. When I'm violent, it's Carlito's Way. Blood on my feet, on the street, I'm dancing crazy. Kentuckinator, please do not take gold from Leprechaun. I cannot stress this enough. Thumbs up for a Chester E. Arthur reference. BobbyD7149. I know exactly what you mean about zombie fatigue, because I had it after watching the Walking Dead series, when I didn't finish, by the way, because I got bored of it. But I lost all interest in new zombie movies until I watched the first Wormwood movie, which blew me away and got me back into watching them again. But I totally agree about the sadness, though. It really raised the bar for that kind of movie. I agree. The Nick Mua from Belgium. Woo! Dr. Giggles brings back VHS memories. Let us know if it's as goofy as I remember. And Dick Tracy, I didn't know what to make of it after I saw it, but I like it a lot, especially the performances of Mr. Pacino and then the unknown Kathy Bates. They should both work in a Brian De Palma horror project. It would be something special. Questions. We recently lost William Friedkin. Do you think a film like Cruisin' on Friedkin's, on my Friedkin Top 3 could be made today with all the political correctness? I don't think people cruise anymore. I don't know if it has an idea about political correctness. I don't know if people pay for directors like Friedkin to make that stuff anymore. But in general, people don't really cruise. They use Grindr. They use Tinder. They don't cruise. Not typically. Did you see Alan Delon in the horror anthology Spirits of the Dead 68? No, I didn't. I have the movie. I will watch it eventually, though. Three, what would you do if your house was overrun with bloodthirsty creatures? Hope you YouTube trouble will be the thing of the past. Try to get the fuck out of the house, but if I couldn't, fight my damnedest to kill them. Depends what kind of creatures, depends how intelligent. It all depends on these scenarios. Mood 616, speak of the devil. Fucking YouTube strikes are garbage. That they are. The Psychic 614, love John Leguizamo and Carlita's Way. He's awesome. Benny from the Bronx. Then user T text one Wi-Fi says 1981 West End Girls, and he puts lyrics. Sometimes you're better off dead. There's a gun in your hand. It's pointing at your head. You think you're bad, too unstable. I'm not going to read the whole song, but it's the East End Boys and the West End Girls and the West End Town, a dead end world. It sounds like a cool song. I don't know if I know it, though. I'm sure it is something to do with 1981. The new Nick Mua from Belgium. The Orchard Eye Murder looks very interesting, equal parts stylish and sleazy. The Brits excel at that sort of story. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. Ken Kunkley, 3959. Carlito's Way is yet another really good film by Brian De Palma. The Godfather and Godfather 2 are tied for my favorite movie. And in 87, I read an interview with Al Pacino in which he said that he was living in the shadow of Michael Corleone. But Carlito's Way proved that he could still make a good gangster film. I also thought that John Leguizamo was really good in the film as well. Now, regarding The Longest Yard, I put that in my top five Burt Reynolds movies. The film was produced by Albert Ruddy, who produced The Godfather but turned down Part 2 to do The Longest Yard. This film was far better than the remake. I just don't buy Adam Sandler as a star quarterback. When I saw you were reviewing the movie, the first thing I thought was Richard Kiel's hilarious performance. He said he was sorry. Yeah, he's great in it. Now, regarding your update, when you mentioned Bull Moose, it brought back memories of going to the store in Salem, New Hampshire every Monday night to wait until midnight to snag the new Blu-rays from boutique labels. That store looks like a movie collector's heaven. That store looks like a movie collector's heaven. Nick Mua. He does the old questions here. So then what else do we have? Hope your trouble on YouTube. Oh, hope your YouTube trouble will be a thing of the past. And Brad Brains Horror. Hey, Dave. Sorry your stuff got taken down. Saburo looks incredibly good. Love on Earth Films. Hudson 3838. Shirley Eaton is still with us at 86. She's a golden girl in more than one way. And that's what I was talking about when I mentioned Girl from Rio, still alive. And Stephen Hyde gave me the flame, thank you. And Darnina 1869, YouTube is the Antichrist. That it may be, boy. That it may be. So I'm going to show you my quick little update here. It's very quick. First up is going to be a 4K of the Suicide Squad. It's like $8.50. I know people are like, Dave, why are you buying superhero movies? It's James Gunn, and I enjoyed this one for $8.50. I would watch it again. It's silly, and it's got Rooker and Stallone and stuff. And then this one I picked up for 81. It is from Eureka Films, and this is Dreadnought, more of a martial arts film, but does have more elements from my understanding. So yeah, I picked this up for 81. Definitely gonna watch it in style, but let's get the hell out of here. So thank you very much, guys, for watching, and as always, have a good one. Man.